We're continuing in the 25th chapter of Ezekiel. In this chapter, Ezekiel is prophesying about the fall of the nations round about Judah. And in the first 7 verses, he talked about the fall of the Ammonites. Now, beginning in the 8th verse, he includes the prophecy against Moab and against Seir, which is going to be Edom. So verse 8 says, "Thus saith the Lord God, because that Moab and Seir do say, Behold, the house of Judah is like unto all the heathen." Now, in this verse, he includes Seir along with Moab. And as you know, Seir is the capital of Edom. However, he's going to really give the prophecy against Edom individually, beginning in verse 12. So we're really, we're more concerned with Moab. Moab was the brother of Ammon. He was the son of Lot by his eldest daughter. And so these Moabites then were actually cousins to the Ammonites. And their nation was located kind of south and southwest of the Ammonites. And they bordered along the southern part of the eastern border of the Dead Sea. Now they, like the Ammonites then, were also kin to the Israelites, kin to these people of Judah, and consequently they should have had a little deeper and closer feeling toward them, had more mercy shown toward them than the other nations because of this kinship. But it seems that that made no difference. The kinship might have even caused them to have more enmity, because they truly were against the people of God, and consequently they're going to have to suffer greatly for it. Now, what is the main thing that he holds against them? It's stated here in verse 8. He says it's because they do say, "Behold, the house of Judah is like unto all the heathen." Now, to say that the house of Judah is like unto all the heathen really is bringing two areas of displeasure against God. One is, when he says they're like unto all the heathen, it means that they are rejoicing then in the fact that their religion has deteriorated into idolatry. They are saying that Judah is no better than the other nations religion-wise. They are now fully given over to idolatry. And it seems that they were saying this in such a way as to put the nation down. They were saying this in such a way as to bring about a sort of a glee or glory in the idea that now Judah was no better than anybody else. Now their religion was like that of everybody else, and so they couldn't condemn anyone else. They couldn't speak against the religions round about them because they were like them. And we're going to see that that very same principle holds true today when we take on the practices of the traditions that have been handed down from our forefathers, when we take on the religions that are round about us and include their doctrine as a part of our doctrine, things that are wrong, things that do not come from God, but yet we practice them because the people round about us practice them, then that puts us on the same level with them, and we're no longer able then to point out their errors, their faults, or to say that they're wrong, because we're doing the same thing they're doing. And consequently, this causes them to rejoice. This causes them to very quickly pick up the fact that we're doing the same thing they're doing, and so there's no use to talk about anything that's wrong. There's no use to bring up anything that needs to be changed or corrected, because we then are practicing the same kind of religion they are. Now, that seems to be the idea here. Moab was saying, "Judah is like unto all the heathen." Judah is no different. They now are guilty of idolatry. Now, this was a slam not only on the nation and on the religion that this nation should have been following, but it was also a slam on God. Because there were some in Judah that did not practice like all the other heathen. There were some who was different. God was going to make arrangements for his worship and his way to be preserved, and for his way then to actually, in the long run, to predominate over the idolatrous practices. So they were pleased in the apostasies of Israel. They were glad to see them forsake their God. They were glad to see them take up the practice of idolatry. And it seemed that they hoped then that the true worship of the true God would be lost forever. Now the second thing that this implies when he says that the house of Judah is like unto all the heathen is that they were pleased with the calamities that befell Judah. Now Judah was like all the other nations in that the Chaldeans had overrun them. They had been destroyed. They were taken into captivity. The very vast bulk of them had been killed one way or another, either by the sword or by famine or by pestilence. And so this seemed to be to the outside world proof then that the living God, the true God, could not take care of his own, that he had forsaken them, and that he maybe didn't even have the power or the ability to protect them. And so they took great pleasure in proclaiming then that Judah is like unto all the heathen. They're just like any other heathen nation. They don't have any more protection than the other nations do. Their God is no more of a God than the other nations' gods are gods. And so this then would go against, of course, the principles of God. This would make God most unhappy with them to have this idea. And so as a result of it then, God is going to bring about their destruction. And he states this beginning in verse 9. Therefore, behold, I will open the side of Moab from the cities, from his cities which are on his frontiers. The glory of the country, Beth Jeremoth, Baal Meon, and Kiriathaim, and now he names these three cities as major cities on the frontier of Moab, and he said he's going to open the side of Moab. He's going to destroy their defenses. He's going to make it so that Moab has no protection from the invaders. And consequently, the invaders will be able to just go right on into Moab then, after they finished with Ammon. And Moab will seemingly have no way to defend itself. And there will be open prey then for these armies of the Chaldeans. And he further says in verse 10, under the men of the east with the Ammonites, and will give them in possession, that the Ammonites may not be remembered among the nations. So he here includes the fact now that the destruction of Moab is going to be right along with the destruction of the Ammonites. And as we know, the destruction was initiated and brought about by the invasion of the Chaldean armies. The Chaldeans then were the ones who moved in and invaded these nations, Ammon and Moab. They're the ones that destroyed the city so that there was no frontier protection for Moab, and they brought them then to their knees, and as a result of this, the Ammonites were not even remembered among the nations anymore. And then following the invasion and destruction by the Chaldean armies, in moved the Arabians, who were not really soldiers at all. They were peaceful people. They were the keepers of cattle and sheep and goats, and they then turned out to be the possessors of the lands. They possessed Ammon, and they possessed Moab, and it was simply because these nations had been so demolished, had been so defeated by the Babylonian armies that all they had to do is move in and take over. They set up their tents. They moved their stock in, their cattle in, and they then took possession. And so he says, under the men of the east with the Ammonites, and will give them in possession, that the Ammonites may not be remembered among the nations. Now, he has so much vengeance that he wants to take on the Ammonites that he again, here in the middle of talking about the destruction of Moab, he reminds of the fact that the Ammonites are not going to be remembered among the nations. And so he says in verse 11, and I will execute judgments upon Moab, and they shall know that I am the Lord. That seems that the destruction of Moab is not going to be so complete as that of Ammon, but he is going to bring enough judgment upon Moab that they shall know that I am the Lord. He's going to make them feel the bitter taste and the painful sting of his vengeance. They're going to know that this is the true God. They're no longer going to be gloating over the fact that Judah is like unto all the heathen. They're no longer going to be stating that this religion is going to be totally wiped out, that it's gone, that it's being replaced by something that the heathen have given them. They're no longer going to be gloating over the fact that Judah is taken into captivity and the nation is no longer functioning. They're going to know that I am the Lord, and they're going to appreciate then the things of God. And so it is with us today. Let us not gloat over the downfall of someone's religion, over the fact that they have apostatized, over the fact that they have gone into the way of the heathen. We shouldn't gloat over that. We should recognize the fact, and we should defend ourselves against it. We should not allow this thing to happen to us, but it's a sad thing. It's a serious thing. And it's God's place then to take the vengeance. It's God's place to make the corrections in other people's. It's not our place. And so we observe with the great solemnity that goes along with the things of God. Our study continues in the 25th chapter of Ezekiel. In this chapter, as we know, he is giving the judgments against the nations round about Judah. We've already talked about the judgment against Ammon and Moab. And now, beginning with the 12th verse, we're going to have the prophecy against Edom. The Edomites were the descendants of Esau. And, of course, Esau was the older brother of Jacob. Now, there had always been trouble between Jacob and Esau. Esau sold his birthright for the mess of pottage. Jacob received the blessing in the place of Esau, and Esau actually forfeited his right to be the inheritor as the elder, and the blessing was placed on the younger, Jacob. And it was actually stated that the elder should serve the younger. Well, these Edomites then are much closer kin to Israel than either Ammon or Moab, but it seems they dealt them more misery, actually. There was a lot of feuding, always trouble between these two nations, and this greatly displeased God because they were close kin. Verse 12 says, "Thus saith the Lord God, because that Edom hath dealt against the house of Judah by taking vengeance, and hath greatly offended, and revenged himself upon them." Now this was the sin of Edom. They dealt against the house of Judah by taking vengeance. So we see from this verse that the sin of Edom was the fact that they were taking revenge against Israel, against Judah, the people of God. The Edomites had been of old tributaries to the Jews, according to the sentence that the elder should serve the younger. In Jehoram's time, they revolted. But then Amaziah severely chastised them, according to 2 Kings 14 and 7, and for this they took vengeance. Now they would pay off all the old scores. And not only did they incense the Babylonians against Jerusalem, but they also cried against it themselves. They were now in the position of taking vengeance, and God does not allow this. God states very clearly that vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord, and he does not allow somebody else to take vengeance in his place. Even though the Jews might have done them wrong, it was God's place to take the vengeance and not the Edomites' place to take it. So we see when these Babylonians came in against Jerusalem, according to Psalms 137, verse 7, he states, "Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof." So they were crying to the Babylonians to go ahead and raise this city, to completely destroy it. They were encouraging the thing, and in doing this encouragement to the Babylonians, they were actually taking their own vengeance against this people, a thing that God does not allow to be done. The book of Obadiah, the shortest book in the Old Testament, is dedicated to talking about this destruction of Edom, how that God was displeased with them. Now I'd like to read from Obadiah, verses 10 through 14, to show what they had done. "For thy violence against thy brother Jacob shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces, and foreigners entered into his gates, and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast one of them. But thou shouldest not have looked on the day of thy brother in the day that he became a stranger. Neither shouldest thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day of their destruction. Neither shouldest thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress. Thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their afflictions in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Neither shouldest thou have stood in the crossway to cut off those of his that did escape. Neither shouldest thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the day of distress. So he very plainly shows that they were aggravating and assisting the Babylonians. They actually stood in the crossway to prevent those that would escape. They looked upon their brother in his time of distress. They were gleeful about it. They were actually taking their vengeance on this people of God. And so God's not going to let this go by unpunished. You know, the Edomites had even been, from way back when they first were encountered by the children of Israel coming out of the wilderness, they wouldn't let them pass through their land. They made them take the long southern route around the land and caused them all kinds of aggravation in that way. And these things then are not going to go unnoted by God. We need to take careful note of ourselves today that God does not allow, he does not condone one brother rising up against another brother, and he certainly does not allow one taking vengeance against another. Just not our place to do that. This is God's place. So we read then about the punishment he's going to bring about in the 13th verse. Therefore thus saith the Lord God, I will also stretch out mine hand upon Edom, and will cut off man and beast from it. I will make it desolate from Teman, and they of Dedan shall fall by the sword. Now Teman was in the southern part of the country. Dedan was in the northern part. So he's stating here that from the north to the south, he's going to make it desolate. They're going to fall by the sword, and he's going to cut off man and beast from it. So he is going to bring a great punishment upon them. And this would be, of course, brought about by the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, the very ones that they were agging on to fight against Jerusalem, would then turn on them, and they also would be brought down. So those that elect to take vengeance themselves in the place of God are going to have God's vengeance then heaped upon them. God was displeased with this behavior of brother against brother. He'd even told Israel in Deuteronomy 23:7, thou shalt not abhor an Edomite. Even though Edom had done them wrong, they were not to take any vengeance against Edom. And we know then that God felt the same way, that Edom shouldn't take vengeance against them. And this destruction of the Edomites by the Chaldeans, it seems to be referred to in Jeremiah 49 verse 8. But not only was the nation of Edom going to be punished by the Chaldeans, but he states quite plainly in verse 14 that they're also going to be punished by Israel itself. He says in verse 14, and I will lay my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel, and they shall do in Edom according to mine anger and according to my fury, and they shall know my vengeance, saith the Lord God. So this verse strongly implies then that Israel is going to be brought back. They're going to be given another chance at having a world power. And when they do, then they are going to return this vengeance of God to the people of Edom. According to Obadiah 21, and saviors shall come upon Mount Zion to judge the Mount of Esau, and the kingdom shall be the Lord's. So there would be a return to Mount Zion, and there would be a judgment of Esau by them. In Isaiah 63:1, he talks of Israel's Redeemer coming with dyed garments from Bozra, and this implies a promise that Israel should recover itself again to such a degree as to be in a capacity of curbing this insolent neighbor of Edom. Now we find in history, in 1 Maccabees 5:3, that Judas Maccabeus fought against the children of Esau in Idumea, and gave them a great overthrow, abated their courage, and took their spoil. And then Josephus also says that Hyrcanus made the Edomites tributaries to Israel. So we're able to see how God truly does bring about his vengeance. And it seems that the vengeance is amply brought about when even those that have been wronged, like the Israelites, when they are used then as the implements of God to bring about the vengeance of God upon those that have done the wrong. And in this case, he says, I will lay my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel. And they shall do in Edom according to mine anger and according to my fury. So these things that were done were things that God had wanted to be done. It was according to God's anger, according to God's fury. And then he says, and they shall know my vengeance, saith the Lord God. So it turned out that it was really the vengeance of God that was being heaped upon this land of Edom by the Israelites. And as we have shown, later history bears out the fact that that certainly did come about. Now we must take some very serious thought ourselves to the fact that we must not allow ourselves to be put into the position of trying to get vengeance for some wrong that somebody's done to us, especially not against a brother. God absolutely abhors enmity between brothers, and then for one to try to take vengeance on another. This is God's place to take the vengeance. It was taught in the Old Testament. It's also taught in the New Testament in the book of Romans, that we are very plainly to let God be the one that takes the vengeance. Now, the methods that God uses, the instruments that God chooses to employ to bring this about, this is up to God, and they can be various. In this particular case, the Chaldeans originally did it to bring vengeance on Edom, and then later Israel itself brought the vengeance. Well, we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.